The Affordable Care Act's rocky rollout continues. The troubled Federal Health Care Exchange website is still under repair after promises that it would be running well by the end of the month.
How does this compare to past federal program rollouts? Jonathan Pollack is here to put today's news in historical context. He's a history instructor at Madison College. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be back.
So let's start with Social Security, a big deal at the time. First of all, remind me when it came out.
So it came out in 1935, and it was kind of like health care reform in general, which really the genesis of it goes back into the 1940s. Social insurance had been an ongoing negotiation in American politics and government really since the end of the Civil War, that the campaign kind of began with Civil War widows, that there was an idea coming up in the 1870s that for women who lost their husbands in the Civil War, fighting to keep the country together and so forth, that perhaps the government owed them something in return when they no longer had a source of support. So from that beginning, there was a greater awareness that one of the enduring problems in the United States was that as families kind of stopped living together over multiple generations, as people began to move around the country more, people moved out of their parents' houses earlier, and their parents wanted to maintain some independence, the flip side of that was that lots of elderly people were deeply impoverished. So Social Security, like health care reform, didn't come out of nowhere. It was a long-time process, and in 1935, Franklin Roosevelt, looking to ameliorate conditions of poverty during the Depression, worked with Congress to get that into motion.
Was it as controversial? Was there this idea that this is a socialist enterprise?
There really was, yeah. I mean, what you also had with Social Security was you had other movements going on around the country on kind of a local or regional basis that tried to accomplish the same thing. You had out of Louisiana, starting in the early 1930s, you had Huey Long, the governor of that state, who created what he called share the wealth clubs, organizations that people would buy in and would create a kind of Social Security. You had Dr. Francis Townsend out in California, who started the Townsend Clubs, which again was a Social Security-like idea that didn't have – and the downside of both of these ideas was that they were voluntary, that they didn't bring in – as many people, the contributions weren't automatic. So there was a very real danger that the promise that they set up, that people would be able to receive some kind of pension as they aged, as they could no longer work, those pensions wouldn't be there if there weren't new recruits coming in. So Social Security, in addition to facing, questions about a national system like that and concerns that was an overreach of government, mm-hmm. there were also these rival organizations that were quite popular. That criticism was very much there.
So one of the big problems with the Affordable Care Act has been the computer side of it, the online side of it. But what boggles my mind is starting this big program, enrolling every human in the United States without any computers. How did they do that?
Well, they had to use people had to register for Social Security. So there was a long there's a big effort by the federal government to get people to register, to raise awareness of it. What I think is interesting is as I was kind of investigating some of the history in detail leading up to this, if you remember, part of the controversy about the Affordable Care Act back during the summer and early in the fall was there was an idea that the Obama administration floated and then was quickly shot down by Congress of getting like the NFL involved, of getting like football players and broadcasters on football games to kind of mention it and so forth, mm-hmm. and get people to sign up. And Congress was furious. They reacted. Roosevelt did the same thing with Social Security and the clergy. Between August of 35 and January of 1936, in August of 35, Congress filibustered the funding for Social Security. And so Congress went out of session without really funding the program they had created. When they reconvened in 1936, then the Congress put together a bill that passed the funding. Mm-hmm. But initially, there's this gap in late 35 where there's a program and people aren't signing
up.
So
it exists and there's zero money.
Yeah. And so what Roosevelt did was he wrote this form letter to clergy members across the country, like asking them in really like diplomatic and very mild language, could you find it maybe some way to bring this up in a sermon at some point and get people talking about it? So So part of the challenge that he faced was, right, that they, you know, people had to be signed up manually, that the federal government had to send forms out to people's homes. They had to work with a post office to get stuff to people. So as difficult as the website is, there were difficulties before the creation of a whole online world.
Eventually, obviously, it more or less worked and has stuck with us till this day.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. In both Social Security and looking at the history of Medicare and Medicaid, each of these were one of the things that really struck me as the parallels here was that each of these were programs that people had thought about for a long time. There had been efforts in Congress to get these passed. Legislation would come up. It would die by a narrow margin. It would come back again in the next session. And that there was also, in a lot of cases, the opposition lasted after the bill was passed. In the wake of Medicare, the American Medical Association tried to launch a rival program called Elder Care that they felt would compensate doctors at a higher rate and wouldn't have as much central control as Medicare. Needless to say, by the end of like 1966, it was gone. It turns out it didn't actually work. But each of these, at each step in the creation of these large programs, there was a huge resistance all along. The resistance didn't stop when the program passed, but eventually enough people signed up and the programs became popular enough that they've persisted.
With Medicare and Medicaid in 1965, mm-hmm. right, I did my research right there, were there wrinkles, were there problems, and were people mad about any problems they might have had?
Well, I mean, one of the main wrinkles, I think, especially with Medicaid, was that all along it's been a program that's jointly administered by the federal government and the states. So, for example, it wasn't until the early 1980s that Arizona, which was the last holdout, signed on to accept Medicaid money. It wasn't mandated the same way that Social Security had been. So in that sense, you know, you're looking there at it's about an 18-year period of resistance. So that indicates the same kind of ongoing sort of refusal to implement it. Social Security, again, that was much more – that was kind of enacted at the individual level and at the corporate level. So there wasn't an opportunity for that sort of resistance. But Medicaid, absolutely.
Were there lessons learned, do you think? I mean, it's a comparable program, the Affordable Care Act, in its scope to Medicare and Medicaid, trying to implement this nationwide thing in cooperation with the states. Were there lessons learned or not learned that maybe could have been?
That's a great question. I mean, I think the primary lesson learned, and again, it really struck me when I looked at Roosevelt's letter to the clergy, was that even though in each case, these programs, they're an individual self-interest to sign on to them, that individuals see clear benefits. And as a result, society does in a broader sense that if people get Medicare sooner or they get medical care sooner, they stay out of emergency rooms. Those of us who are insured aren't like also paying for emergency room visits and so forth for people who can't afford them. That there's a great deal of interest collectively, but there's still like this resistance. I mean, as you mentioned at the start, there's a great deal of anxiety in the U.S. About a government role in daily life in this manner. And I think the Obama administration tried to learn those lessons. They tried to do that kind of PR work. They tried to find different avenues of reaching the general public that doesn't necessarily watch the newscast, that's not necessarily going to open the form letter from their representative in Congress and so forth. But at the same time, I think what they weren't thinking of maybe was the backlash that occurred against each of these, and the way that in the current climate in Washington, that backlash would have been, I think they should have expected that there'd be much more of it.
All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. Now, John, we bring you here regularly to talk about putting the news of the day in historical perspective. We've got another piece of history we wanted to touch on today. It's the anniversary today of the timeless romantic movie Casablanca. How do I pronounce it?
I don't know. That's a question for the ages, Rob. Yeah. But we do know that it premiered on this day, November 26, in 1942, in New York City. And we have a clip.
Sam.
Yes, boss.
It's December 1941 in Casablanca. What time is it in New York?
What? My watch stopped.
I bet they're asleep in New York. I bet they're asleep all over America. Of all the G gin joints in all the towns in all the world. She walks into mine.
All right, clip from Casablanca there. And John, you told us you have a story. This is an important movie to you.
Yeah, it's the first movie that my wife and I saw back in when we were in college. There was one of the film societies at the college we went to brought it back and showed it. So it was this great classic film that for us has this big significance.
So John, do you think that Ingrid Bergman should have gotten on that plane with Victor? I don't think I'm spoiling anything here. This movie came out in 1942, except maybe for Rob, who's never seen the whole thing.
That's
but
true.
Did she do the right thing? She should have stayed with Humphrey Bogart, right?
Yeah, I mean I think for the conventions, the film she needed not to. You know, it's this it's a big part of 40s film at that point to have that sort of tragedy, that sort of open ending there, where she stays behind. Yeah, that's my take on it.
Jonathan Pollack, thanks a lot for joining us today. Stick around, more to come on Central Time.